the sensor development to get higher resolution, to see further, to not be as expensive. I think there's some wonderful opportunity there. And then this AI and machine learning around the optimization of massive fleets of vehicles. How do you plan where you're putting your charger? How do you plan the size of the vehicles? If I have 100 at this size of vehicle versus 70 at this size of vehicle, what's optimal? I have a shovel that's loading those trucks. Is it better to be 100 ton and do one load with every vehicle or two shovelfuls? And so there's some sizing and some energy optimization that is compelling and really a key to survival as they are forced to move to electric.
Budget overruns, brick devices, data breaches, building connected products is hard. Welcome to Over the Air, sharp, unfiltered conversations with executives about their IoT journeys, the mistakes they made, the lessons they learned, and what they wish they'd known when they started. I'm your host, Ryan Prosser.
Welcome back to Over the Air, IoT Connected Devices and the Journey. My name is Ryan Prosser, CEO of Verri, and today we're joined by Mel Torrey, and we're going to be talking about what innovation in IoT looks like in the roughest environments in the world. Mel, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So for listeners who aren't familiar and maybe don't know a ton about the mining industry, tell us a little bit about ASI.
We are an autonomous solution provider. So we automate vehicles that are currently used in the industrial space. We provide retrofit kits that make them drive fully autonomous. And then we have a software solution that can then remotely observe those autonomous vehicles from hundreds and thousands of miles away.
So ASI stands for Autonomous Solutions Incorporated, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that you and I were talking before, I think is fascinating about your company is you guys were a little bit of what I would characterize a late bloomer, and you're bootstrapped, which is amazing. Bootstrapped, for those who don't know, just means self-funded. You don't see this very often, and you don't see it very often in the hardware world, but almost never in the heavy industrial. And talk about like why you guys were late bloomers. It took some time to get to this point. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a tough industry. SoftBank, our partner, said that they estimate 90 to 95% mortality rate on robotics companies. And so it's brutal. And a lot of that comes with the type of money and the journey and how hard it is. John Deere saw a paper I wrote when we were at the university in a robotics lab and said, hey, can you make autonomous farming safe? And so we started working with them. And then about 23 years ago, they said, if you start a company, we'll start partnering with you. And they pulled me aside in a restaurant, and on a napkin, they drew out the innovator's dilemma curves that Clayton Christensen described as the challenge for big companies to innovate. And he said, we need you. We are going to get disrupted unless we invest in you because you can move fast. And so we want to partner and develop product with you. So we spun the company out 23 years ago and started to build that. They got the rights for their markets and we got the rights for everywhere else. So we, based on that, built kind of a platform, but then really bootstrapped it. So we went to the OEMs with that innovator's dilemma and raised about $200 million in OEM-funded product development. So we got about 150 patents and created this IP portfolio so that we could be ready now for where the labor shortage is so acute and really at a dire state where people have to have it. And it's an exciting time.
It does feel like you guys are really well placed. I don't know anything about mines. I don't think I've ever been in a mine, certainly not on purpose. But I think the 2016 election cycle, I might be wrong, there was a lot of discussion between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump about the miners in West Virginia and let's create more mining jobs. And one of the interesting findings was the number one people that did not want more mining jobs was the miners. And that they were saying, I want non-mining jobs because this is not a great job. Here comes ASI trying to come up with innovative ways to make some of the more difficult jobs in that mechanized. Can you talk about some of the technologies that you guys have developed to make that possible?
Yeah, I'd love to. It is such a brutal environment, and it's typically in the middle of nowhere, and the jobs are dangerous. The environment is brutal. So the weather is nasty. We've done autonomous mining in the Ukraine, where you're in the incredibly cold and snow and sleet, those kind of things. And then down in Australia, where we've got a mine running, I was down there in last January, and it was like 127 degrees. And so just brutal environments, and they're parking trucks because they just can't get enough people to operate them. And so what we did was provide a solution so that they could run that mine from 800 miles away in Perth. And we created the tools so that we could use their fiber optic network and allow the truck drivers to stay in Perth, not have to fly into a camp for 2 weeks in the nasty weather and operate from an office environment. And to do that, on the vehicle side, we had to create the sensor fusion to allow that vehicle that's 400 ton, drive over your house without noticing kind of mass and allow it to navigate safely. And so I think the AI and machine learning around intelligently optimizing the hauling of that iron ore out of the mine, as well as the sensor fusion that allows us to see through the massive dust clouds, the weather, and still be able to avoid hitting a parked vehicle, a kangaroo, those kinds of unexpected obstacles that shouldn't be in the road. So those are some of the biggies.
But you say kangaroo, I assume we're not talking about Ukraine in this example. This is Australia.
Not in that scenario, no. But we have heard of kangaroos getting killed by mining trucks that were autonomous. So that one comes up fairly often as an example.
So you mentioned sensor fusion a couple of times, and this was one that I hadn't heard as much until you and I started talking. The rest of the world would think of this as like obstacle detection and avoidance. I wanted to ask a question. It vary. Of course, we work a lot with sensors. Each one has its strengths and weaknesses. Often there is never a perfect one. There is a perfect ones often for an application. And you're looking for offsetting weaknesses. Some can see through dust clouds. Other have thermal sensing. Is that how you're using the sensor fusion, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, that's definitely it. There just isn't silver bullet to solve this problem. You've got radar that has less accuracy, broader cloud of coverage, but really can't give you the precision of a LIDAR. And so when we've got a mining truck that is 400 tons filled with 400 tons of iron ore, it takes about 2 football fields to stop when we're going full speed. And so you need a sensor that can see that far. And yet you can't stop unless that vehicle or that obstacle is within where you're really going to drive, because there are buildings and animals and anything else along the sides of those roads. So the ability to penetrate the weather, the ability to have the range that you need for such a massive vehicle going at fairly high speeds, the precision to be able to go around corners and know when vehicles are truly in your path and which vehicles aren't, requires that range of solutions that then are fused together. And then you're using AI and filtering to move that dependence. So, you know what? I'm going to depend more on radar right now because I'm sensing a lot of dust, and then slow down a little bit because I don't have quite the range. And then when the dust clears, now I start to shift my dependence to some of the more accurate sensors that aren't good at penetrating that dust and allow me to go back to those higher speeds. So there's some intelligent balancing and shifting of your filtering so that you can optimize your speeds based on the strengths of those sensors you're bringing together.
So LIDAR, radar, various other sensors, we promised the audience a discussion of these technologies, but in a brutally difficult environment here in the United States right now. In January, we're gearing up for the Super Bowl, getting close to the Super Bowl. There's a lot of discussion of making football helmets intelligent. I do hope that there's some big developments there. And I think people think, you know, football collision, that's a difficult environment that you really need to ruggedize for. Man, I think mining is probably a football collision every 2 or 3 seconds for months and months and months and months. I mean, that's what you need your technologies to be developed to withstand, correct?
Yes.
Can you talk about some of those challenges?
Yeah, I think the weather is the first one. I've been in mines at a minus 50 degrees And that is the kind of temperature where solid steel is snapping because it's so brittle. And then I've been down in the 127 degrees hot. And then you put the accelerations of driving on a road that's been cut out of a rock mountain. And so these aren't nicely manicured. They're not asphalt. They're not gravel. They're literally carved out of a mountain. And so the accelerations that these sensors are experiencing is just brutal. So you got weather extremes, and then you have these nasty vibrations. We have certain sensors that we have to replace every so many miles or hours of operation. It's just scheduled because they are going to fail. Putting LIDARs on, we went through 100% failure for a year. Every LIDAR we put on there failed, and none of them stayed working. And so the automotive industry is providing a wonderful cost reduction for us because they're putting millions and millions of dollars into this development. We've had to go back to them and go, really nice, love the range, love the resolution, but every one of your sensors has failed within this many hours. Please help us with this and that. And so they've been wonderful to work with and have helped in changing their designs so that we can get to that place now where running 24/7, I think hundreds of thousands of miles on this equipment at 24/7 at those extreme temperatures. And we're finally getting to a place where many of these sensors can endure for the year, for that season of operation.
That's amazing. Give us an example of a learning that might surprise people. You know, vibrations, weather, blah, blah, blah. But like, man, we were surprised to discover that this thing, I don't know, actually, you tell us, what's a learning or two that might surprise people, that a change you need to make to the sensors to make them applicable in your environment?
I think the vibration is probably the biggest. You would think that a vehicle in the automotive industry would be robust. It's driving on gravel roads on a farm. It's driving through town over bumps and curves, those kinds of things. But the accelerations that are happening 24/7 without relenting to destroy every sensor we've strapped on the vehicle was mind-blowing to me when I saw the kind of schedule we were replacing these. They became disposable. They became a consumable item, and they're pretty expensive to be consumables.
Mm-hmm. Just an aside, we don't have to go too far down this rabbit hole, but diesel, pretty high on vibration in terms of propulsion systems. Diesel high, gasoline medium, electric much less. You know, I think of a golf cart as a pretty smooth running deal. F-250 diesel, quite a bit of vibration. Are we going to see the electrification of vehicles in mining, do you think?
We are. Like in California currently, with one of our partners in the yard truck automation that moves the trailers around distribution centers, they're being fined millions of dollars every year for not being electric. We're seeing that coming into the mining industry where they are being penalized within so many months if they don't get to carbon neutral. And right now, the capability with an electric mining truck is to go one haul cycle before the battery runs out. And so that's not where we need it to be. And so it's going to be a mandate by the governments. Australia is mandating it by a certain date. And we don't have the battery life we need. One of the things that's going to happen is that we're going to reduce the size of the vehicles. And when you take the person out of the math, meaning there's no driver, now you can make smaller vehicles and more of them at the same price as a bigger vehicle with a human in it. And so that's new math that drives a different optimization. And now it'll be around energy optimization and battery life and those kind of things. So I would say it's going to happen. It's going to take a while. It's going to result in some changes in the vehicle design. What was fun is that one customer in Australia said, we cannot get to carbon neutral without autonomy. Because the energy management, if you have a fleet, I think we're doing the largest deployment of autonomous in the world in mining. And I think the number of trucks will be 97. And as you think about the pull on the grid for charging that many trucks, you do not have the capacity. And so you've got to both schedule the charging based on what's intelligent to move the maximum amount of iron ore, you've also got to optimize that based on what your grid can support. And so you've got to schedule these vehicles very carefully so that you are offsetting all of the charging, and you have different roads with different hills that are changing the amount of burn on that battery. And it's a very fun optimization problem that is top of mind right now as they know where they're headed.
So staying on that optimization thread, one of the things that is interesting about your model, you guys are kind of heavy equipment as a service. I don't know if that's how you would characterize it. So that's interesting. I would think that this optimization, this is something you guys think about a lot. If you're selling something as a service, you really want to be mindful of these optimizations. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a great fusion. If you're optimizing a very tough problem, then you're going to be bringing ongoing value through the life of your product. You're going to be making it better every quarter. It's going to get smarter and smarter because it's such a hard optimization problem. And what we are finding is that what was nice about mining is that they already had a software license tied to the human dispatch software. So there's software that tells the humans, based on the quality of the iron ore they're digging in this area, we need 4 loads from you and then 3 loads from this other pit. And so they already had this concept of a software license that had a recurring element to it. And so it was very easy for us to come in and say, autonomous is similar. We're going to bring you this ongoing value of smarter and smarter solutions, and you pay a recurring license. And so for some of our customers, they like a little more on the CapEx side of paying for hardware. Other customers, we give the hardware a cost, and then it's purely a SaaS model. And every year we get a recurring software license for that solution. And what we're really finding is that the easiest math is really around the labor savings. And so that's where all of the SaaS business models end up, is the cost of their labor, the utilization of that labor, and then how much of a share do you give with the end user versus you as a provider for that savings of labor. The other element to it is the robot to human ratio. So if we're at 10 robots per human, which is about where we're at, then you're changing from 10 drivers to one operator who's a higher salary perhaps, but is taking the place of the 10 workers they no longer can get to even show up in the mine. You retrain those drivers to operate the software and upskill them to be able to handle that in Perth, which is what we're doing. And that becomes your business model. You're exchanging some infrastructure with radio and taking that labor and upskilling it to operate the fleet. And then the higher the ratio we can get them to, meaning every quarter we try to make it smarter and smarter, both to optimize the energy, the flow of iron ore, as well as the labor savings by getting a higher ratio of robot to driver or observer.
One follow-up on that, and then I want to be sensitive with your time and get you back to running this company. But 23 years you guys have been in the business, if I'm not mistaken, right? I guess you could answer this question through the lens of giving advice to the next generation of entrepreneurs, or if you close your eyes and think, you know, if Mel was going to be starting his 23-year journey today, what are the opportunities in what I'll call mining tech? What do you see out there? And you say, man, if I was going to do it again from this point forward, what are some of the opportunities you think are really exciting?
I think the electrification is monstrous. It's going to be a mandate and it's so hard. That's a clear winner. I think the sensor development to get higher resolution, to see further, to not be as expensive, I think there's some wonderful opportunity there. And then this AI and machine learning around the optimization of massive fleets of vehicles. How do you plan where you're putting your charger? How do you plan the size of the vehicles? If I have 100 at this size of vehicle versus 70 at this size of vehicle, what's optimal? I have a shovel that's loading those trucks. Is it better to be 100 ton and do one load with every vehicle or 2 shovelfuls? And so there's some sizing and some energy optimization that is compelling and really a key to survival as they are forced to move to electric.
Fascinating. So I want to close this out with ASI. What's next for you guys? So we talked a lot about the last 23 years, some of the really exciting recent stuff. What's on deck for you guys?
What's exciting about mining is we're solving some of the toughest problems. We're doing massive sites with hundreds of vehicles, kind of the opposite of your MVP strategy. But what it allows us for now is if we can run 24/7 in the toughest environment in the world with hundreds of vehicles, now we can move that into construction that has fewer vehicles, that has less of a difficult environment, but a lower price point. And we can then scale into these adjacent markets. And so to do that, we're working on an equity crowdfunding campaign to raise that money to port those technologies into lower cost packages and then scale into these exciting, more rural markets.
We don't have too much time to get into it. I have one follow-up question, just totally out of curiosity. It feels like for the golf course mower tech to work, you want that to be operating in the dark. I don't know anything about golf or mowers, but it seems like that's when the golfers aren't golfing. Is that one of the key engineering challenges here, that this thing needs to operate in low light environments?
Wonderful question. What's neat about LiDAR and radar is they don't care. They actually work better in dark. And so the only downside of that is when a human needs to consider what stopped it and look at the camera image, you're going to have to illuminate in front of the vehicle to see if that was a golf bag, just because it's a safety critical kind of human intervention. The harder part of operating at night, and you're right, that's the desire, because then you can have more people golfing through the day and make more money on your course. The challenge is that you're around people who live next to that golf course and they don't like mowers running in the middle of the night. And so as you move to electric, then you do get that holy grail of quiet operation and operate at night and really optimize the flow of golfers through that golf course.
I love it. Okay, last question. I know that because of the nature of your business, you guys are at a very interesting cross section in IoT. You've taken a lot of tech past its breaking point. You're seeing how folks out there are reacting in challenging environments. Not all companies are good at that. Some are excellent. Who, in your experience, have you seen out there in IoT land that has been a great partner that you want to give a shout out to on the air?
One of the great providers for us has been Ragen Radio. They looked at that radio problem and really created a robust solution that Wi-Fi has historically not been able to handle. And so we do automotive proving grounds and we do mine sites, and having a provider who's made something so robust that even if there are dropouts, even if there are failures of solutions, they'll reroute the messages and ultimately provide something very robust for a mine. For example, one of our mines is $1 million an hour. And so Ragen Radio has provided a solution such that you've got that confidence that when that mining company would love to hold you accountable for any kinds of failures and the cost that you are incurring because of your failures, you can count on their solution to continue to work and not cost you a lot of extra money. So Ragen Radio, I think Continental has been wonderful to work with to provide more and more robust solutions that can keep our vehicles from running into obstacles, keep them operating safe around the humans that are driving the service equipment around our autonomous mining equipment.
Continental, for listeners at home, if you've seen a boat 40 feet or longer, you've probably seen the, looks like a stack of dinner plates on top of each other. These guys are the radar guys for every big boat out there, right? Am I thinking of the right guys?
Yep.
And then last but not least, you guys had a lesser known partner that you were mentioning as well.
Yeah, we worked with a company called Precision Assembly. And one of the keys in crossing the chasm and really getting to scale is to engineer your solutions such that you can build hundreds and thousands of them. And so the hard part is your documentation typically doesn't account for all of the tribal knowledge when your own people are building the solution. And so we've worked with these folks down in the Salt Lake area and really worked through that hard transition of engineers going back to old designs, working on the documentation such that you can hand your designs to anybody and they can make hundreds and thousands of them. And so we've done that with them in mining, made that tough shift. They've been incredibly patient with us as we make that scale from five and tens up to hundreds and thousands of units. And just can't say enough about how great they've been.
That's great. That's three great shout outs. Well, Mel, that's a wrap for today. We ran a little over, but I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being on the show.
It's been fun. Thanks, Ryan.
And thank you for listening. Join us next time as we interview another executive and talk about things that went wrong on a journey that went right.
Over the Air is presented by Veri, your trusted source for cutting-edge technology solutions. For the latest updates and exclusive content, be sure to follow Over the Air on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else great podcasts are found. On behalf of the team here at Veri, thanks for listening.